Gerhardt's back.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
From NJ1015.com, this is the new Jim Gerhardt Podcast.
Again, I'm Jim Gerhardt. Bob Williams, who just got back from fighting a recalcitrant soda machine.
Yeah, there's
a cool down.
Just got here 30 seconds before we went on air here.
Yeah.
Good morning. It's Halloween. It's Facebook
Halloween,
Live.
Yeah.
And I gave up getting dressed up a couple years ago. I used to get dressed up when we did the morning show.
Yeah, it's great
when
costume.
We were on CNH.
You said that last week you were going to come in a costume. Is that?
Yeah, pretty
who
much.
Are you?
I'm mild-mannered Bob Williams. a traffic reporter in the mornings. But we had some good costumes a couple of years ago.
Oh, man, you were great.
Years ago.
When we were on television.
I was dressed up as Bob the Builder one year. Mm-hmm. Came in with looking like Bob the Builder.
SpongeBob.
SpongeBob was my favorite one. It took me about a week to put that thing together. Had a big old box. and the one I really liked was the milk carton. The 101.5 milk carton.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I got dressed up as one of those milk cartons, and it said expires on 101.5. And you were going, what does that mean? I'm going, it's 10. Get it? 101.5 expires 10:15. So it was pretty fun.
I run into people occasionally who still remember this. We were on television for, 7 years?
Yes, on CNH.
In the morning.
Comcast Network.
Comcast Network. I don't think they have that anymore, do they?
I
really don't have any idea.
I don't have Comcast, so I don't know.
I wanted to jump into something I think is pretty serious. It could be useful to a lot of people. I had mentioned last week that my Subaru, my Forester had died.
And what happened with it?
Well, here I found out what was wrong with it. It died. I guess you could kind of compare it with a mule that worked itself to death.
Mm.
But the car was this is a 2003, it had about 150,000 miles on it. Should have gotten at least 200,000 more miles. The engine was perfect, but what happened was the undercarriage had pretty much been corroded and rotted out. And I had the experience of, I was on my way here, thank goodness, and something felt funny with the brakes. So I turned around a couple of blocks from home, came back, put on the brakes before I got in the driveway. It just hit the floor.
Oh, they just
and
fell
because
apart.
All of the brake fluid had just fallen out right there. Thank God it didn't happen on the road.
Because I guess
But the point is that the underside of the car is terribly corroded. This is a car that could last a lot more. And I'm told by the service manager of a dealer I trust very much, this is happening because, as he put it, the chemicals they're putting on the roads now in the bad weather are ruining the undercarriage of a car. So it just never occurred to me, because here was a car for all full-time four-wheel drive.
Right.
Perfect. So I mostly used it in bad weather.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was collecting all of these chemicals. And, of course, even if you're on a road where they may be running off, you're going to hit puddles and it all splashes under there. And unless you flush it out, you might have the same problem.
Yeah.
Which, if you wanted to have it fixed, is hugely expensive, because there's exhaust system, there's catalytic converter covers, there's all kind of stuff in addition to your lines, your hydraulic lines.
Now, do you go to car wash with that vehicle?
No. You see,
you never did the undercarriage?
I would wash it myself every now and again. No, because it didn't occur to me. It just never occurred to me.
Because they offer that.
I hope you're way ahead of me, and you either go to a car wash, or I guess you could get under there with a hose.
I think the undercarriage chemical decalcification.
Do you do that every time you drive in bad weather?
Not every time, but in the bad weather, yes. I have the undercarriage. I pay the extra couple of bucks to do that. But, and also, now, since you have several vehicles, do you drive that vehicle on a regular basis?
No.
Because that's another thing. Because I've learned that, because I used to have my behemoth, my Yukon, my Suburban. I've had several of those, but that's been a separate a third vehicle for, just carting things around. I don't drive it every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I had similar problems where the undercarriage just rust out because I wasn't running it every day. I go through brake lines on a regular basis, and it gets very dangerous because those brake lines go just like it went on you.
Yeah, and I noticed what I hadn't noticed before.
Gas lines, the same
under
thing.
Under the rear door, the metal
yes.
was like, what, rice paper or something, just very, very thin, brittle. You could stick your finger right through.
And and another thing, where do you store your vehicle? Do you store it, were you storing it in a driveway?
It was stored in the yard next to my tool shed.
Okay, but was it on pavement?
No.
Because that's another thing.
Occasionally.
Yeah, because if you're on dirt, that's where a lot of moisture comes up.
I learned the hard way. I had a Porsche Boxster that I kept covered, and it was on gravel. You know, nevertheless, it was killed by mice. Mm. So I have great luck with these cars. And somehow, I took it to the shop when I was having, you drive along, and all of a sudden it would stop, and all the lights would start flashing around. And they could not find what was wrong with it. They found a family of mice nested somewhere near a wiring harness. So, well, anyway, I didn't come here to complain about my luck with cars, but I thought it is kind of interesting.
We're about 5 days from the election.
5 days from the election.
We just want to put it out there at the top of the show here that we're going to take some more comments from candidates that are running for office, either through the assembly or through the local platforms. And you had mentioned this morning, and we talked about it on the air with Jeff and Michelle, who were in for Bill this morning, that you're looking to hear from candidates who are going to lower our property taxes, or at least say that they are, as part of their platform for election.
In New Jersey, that is knee-jerk stuff. Every politician is going to lower your property taxes. Of course, none of them ever has or other will. Oh, something else I had mentioned to you. That I don't know about Elizabeth Warren, the presidential candidate who claimed that she was of Native American descent, which is somewhat questionable right now. I don't know about her, but I have a feeling if they check on this, run an ancestry check on Governor Murphy, you might very well find out that he does have some Native American genes. I notice he frequently speaks in forked tongues, which is something that they did. If you were to believe Black Elk and the other with Cheyennes.
That could very well be.
Well, but here's I saw a commercial. Now, I don't see that much television, really, of the local kind. If I want to see a show, I tape it. And then I can play it back later because the commercials are cut out.
Mm-hmm. Smart
thing. I can go through them or I can see it on Netflix.
A lot of people do that. But some of these networks are making you stay through the commercials. Some of them. Not the ones that you're watching, but even if you're watching it on demand, you'll have to sit through the same amount of commercials because that's how these advertisers are making their money.
Okay, well, I don't know who paid for this. That was the thought, too. Did I help pay for it, taxpayers? This is the governor, and he's doing his Miss Congeniality impersonation, being Mr. Nice Guy, and he's telling about these wondrous things that he's done in his couple of years in office. And one of them was, I don't remember the others, it was the usual horse pucky that politicians do, and I don't blame him for that. That simply goes with the job. But he said that he had lowered property taxes. Now, one problem, when I saw that, when he said that, at that time I had in my pocket my check for my quarterly property tax, which went up a couple hundred dollars. Now, how can he stand there and blatantly claim that he lowered property taxes? Were your property taxes lowered significantly?
No. Mine went up about 10%.
I see the hands of everybody here who's, there's no hands, as you might expect. This is one of the craziest things, that the property taxes are highest in the country.
Yeah.
Obviously confiscatory, extremely unfair, especially to people on fixed incomes, who made the huge mistake of playing the game and being frugal and working hard and buying a home.
Right.
Then later, when you don't have that income coming in, the state really socks it to you.
Right.
But nobody will do anything about it. I don't know why. Even the people, the victims, seem disinclined to do anything about it. So anyway, if there ever was a forked tongue job, he's got it.
Yeah. So if anybody's out there, any candidates running, send us your messages. Give us your elevator pitch. Like if you're going up in an elevator, give us your 10-second pitch. Put it in a bullet point so Dan can write it on the screen for everybody to see. Tell us the good things about your platform, how you're going to lower our property taxes, what you're going to do, whether you're running for the state level or local level. Just tell us, and it should come from your Facebook page or your campaign Facebook page. And no bad-mouthing the other guy.
All right. So this election is next. It's a week from last Tuesday.
Yeah, 5 days. 5 days.
And so the state has invited you to an election.
Yeah.
Did you RSVP? Will you? Are you going to show up? I've looked at. I have my sample ballot here.
Yeah, I just got mine yesterday.
This is, as I told you earlier, this is about as exciting as a wet blintz.
As a wet blintz.
And you can imagine how exciting a wet blintz is.
I only want the dry kind.
I look, for example, it says local school district.
Yeah.
Now they have two people listed in the column, only two. And it says you must vote for two. So what's the point? Give them the damn job.
Yep. Don't even put it on there.
Yeah. But here's
all these uncontested elections.
Me. The rest of these are legislative offices. But they have a public question. Did you have this public question?
I have not looked at it, but I'm sure I do.
Okay. Now, here's the thing. People, if you've ever wondered, whatever happened to Professor Irwin Corey, who was, remember the comedian who talked gibberish? Made no sense
whatever. The gibberish guy, yes.
Irwin Corey is back now, and I'm sure because I think he wrote this public question. If this ain't gibberish, I don't know what is.
Mm-hmm.
Bob, or Dan, have you read that? Dan Alexander?
Yes.
You did read it?
I read it, but I would want to look up something so I can know what I'm talking about.
Well, this I would like to know what they're talking about, too, and I'm supposed to vote yes or no.
So the question is about a paragraph, and the interpretive statement is about three paragraphs.
You've got to watch these public questions. Generally, people vote yes anyway. It's a knee-jerk thing. But sometimes they are worded so that yes means no and no means yes. So,
it's all legalese in there.
All right, this leads to an interesting bit of deja vu, the little political chicanery from years ago. Essentially, as I understand this, and I'm winging it, they want your approval, our approval, to amend the Constitution to allow veterans to receive the value of the veterans' property tax deduction if they reside in a continuing care retirement community. The deduction shall be provided to the care community, which shall pass the value of the deduction to the eligible veteran who lives there. Then it goes into an explanation that's just totally wild, goes off every direction. Essentially, if you look at that, there's a $250 property tax deduction for veterans.
Yeah.
Now, if you, what are you paying property taxes on if you're living in the nursing home? I don't know.
Nothing. Do you still own property at home?
I have. Well,
have you already been permanently moved to the retirement?
Let's say that you do.
Yeah.
Then the state would give that amount of money that you would have gotten, $250, to the management of the nursing home.
Oh, okay. I understand.
For what purpose?
Yeah, it seems like it's just like little.
And I tell you why I'm suspicious of this, and I don't know. Maybe there's some good intent here. Maybe it would actually accomplish something. You go back to the Florio administration, which we remember well. Many people wouldn't. It was a long time ago. Two of the governor's top aides, I think one was his chief of staff and one was the commissioner of the Department of Health. Don't hold me to this exactly. Had become involved in a process of buying up licenses for nursing homes. I did not realize this, but they're hugely expensive, and it's like buy a liquor license.
Mm.
Now, they would buy up the license, and then they would have that. I don't know how they did it, whether they leveraged it or whether they somehow or not put out the money, but somehow how this thing worked. Now, they're not going to open one. But you had to buy it from them.
Buy it back from them.
You had to buy it back from them.
Like a property broker.
Like brokering and property. And the thing is that they were allowed somehow to corner the market.
Mm.
And so nobody else had these available. So if you had, or maybe a chain or something, you wanted to open such a care facility, you had to buy it from them at a tidy profit. So I'm a little leery of how this goes anyway. I mean,
does it seem like it's of a category that would warrant a public question? Won't you think that couldn't that have been approved through the legislature in the process? Like a bill or something like that? Why do we have to vote on that?
Dan Alexander, our certainly right arm here when it comes to reasoners, sets. is going to get some information on just what that means. But if you just look at the surface of it, they are supposed to give, if you're entitled, if you're in a nursing home, and you are entitled to a $250 property tax refund, or rebate, or refund, or
that it's going to go, it's going to go to the management of
it. It will be handed to the management of that. Now, I don't know how many people would be involved in this, how much money's coming in, but there's nothing in here that says how they have to spend it.
Correct.
Do they
keep it? Is it going to go directly to the patient?
I don't know. Is that like a little slush fund for the patient to buy something? It doesn't say. Or this is supposed to somehow help them enhance the care. How? Okay,
it's only $250, but that probably adds up with the thousands of people under the care of the state or the nursing homes, right?
Okay, Barbara says, my city has zero tax increases for 2020, but Union County takes their pint of blood. Well, you see, the boast is that they say if you call the political people out on reducing property taxes, there are things. They're not going up as bad as they did.
Yeah,
we've slowed down. That's not what we want. I want it done away with, except for the local taxes.
Right.
And if you have to throw in a library tax in a fire district, and Joe says, what's it say on Jim's hat?
It says grip.
It says grip. Can you see that?
Get rid of incumbent politicians,
I thought
Joe.
Everybody knew that. Get rid of incumbent politicians. I know that.
Now's your chance. Five days away.
I was sitting here one day. I hadn't thought of it. I was wearing that on the air, and Governor Corzine was, here talking to Governor Corzine, and he kept looking up at the hat.
And he didn't know what
when
the
we were talking.
Acronym was.
And he asked
was?
Me a couple of times what it's. I didn't have the gall.
that means you, Governor.
I'll tell you later. But it looked like it. It certainly worked. Yeah. Not on him. So. Just so many things here. The public question, you had mentioned interesting thing politically, and I had not paid that much attention to it, but Congressman Jeff Van Drew from South Jersey, who is a newly elected member of the House of Representatives. Right. He became a congressman from the 8th district or whatever.
Yeah, from Atlantic County or something like that. He was a state assemblyman or senator
for a while. And then with a good record.
Right, then he moved up to the congressional.
He's a Democrat.
Right.
He just went to Washington. And he has stated that he will not support the Democratic congressional move for impeachment of the president.
Yeah.
And so you have to wonder why. And my question is, politicians do not do things generally because they have a very strong principle.
Right.
As Ambrose Bierce, again, I'll quote, said, politics is self-interest masquerading as principle.
Right. And since I texted you, Dan and I were chatting, that it could be that Van Drew is not in favor of impeaching the president right now because of the district that he represents.
Which has always been conservative.
Conservative, Republican. Didn't he replace a Republican in that seat?
Yeah, Frank Lobiondo.
Yeah, Frank Lobiondo, longtime Republican. And maybe he doesn't want to upset his base.
Well, it has to be. It would be a very practical reason.
Because he's up for election again next year, right?
So you the first thing you say, is that courage or does he have a political death wish?
Right.
Because my understanding is in Congress now the Senate and the House of Representatives, the members have been told by the leadership, the Democrats, if you do not support any Democratic opposition to the president, or if you come out and if you're not against it vehemently,
right.
If you could, especially if you would support something the president does, you get no money from the party in your next campaign.
Right.
Now, he probably doesn't need that money, maybe. I don't know what this exactly means, except he is...
he's certainly making news for standing up for whatever he's standing up for or why he's standing up for it.
Douglas says, I remember my history teacher in the early 60s asked the class what politician meant. And the hands went up, and everybody, the answers were thief, liar, scoundrel, backstabber, egotistic. It has not changed in the last 60 years. I didn't think it went back that far. Just things that pop into your head. Kurt Vonnegut, the great writer. At the beginning of most of his novels, he'd have something, as if somebody said, what advice would you pass on if you had to give advice to people or something for them to understand? What would it be? In one of his early novels, I think it was called Mother Night. You could check me on that if you're a Vonnegut. Is that right? Okay. They said, what would you like to pass on? And he said, I'd say, make love every chance you get. Mm. And I thought that's wonderful. Yeah. Then later, in Breakfast of Champions, he wrote, the same question was asked. He said the advice he would give, the government is not your friend. I saw that. I got upset. How can anybody say that? This would have been in the, 70s, 60s or 70s or something when the book came out. But I think we've all learned that that's the way it's played.
Yeah.
Patty, I just wanted to mention, if we are looking over what would be to your right, I guess, not trying to be disrespectful, not looking at you, the viewer, but we have a big screen over here and the messages are all on the screen. Patty says, most politicians are corrupt. It's a matter if they help the middle class while they help themselves. If the middle class can hang on to the coattails, I guess, or they're... And, well, it's the way the system is. I think very good people often will get into politics. They morph into members of the system. It's almost like, you know, in some science fiction, you go through this gelatinous silver cloud into the wormhole or something. And they get into an entirely different culture. And the culture, I think, breeds that. Number one is, in order to keep the job, if you like it, you have to have a ton of money. And the money is not coming from people like us who think you're doing a wonderful job. Here's money.
Right.
This is coming from special interest, only those sources that want something from you. So the pressures are very, very high. Then, being human beings, you look around and you see how you can play this system. Playing the system is what it's politics 101.
Mm.
And you play your cards right, you can make one heck of a good living on a relatively small job. There are one state senator had 16 accounts in the pension system. You can imagine how that added up. And you'll notice that in New Jersey, the political offices, Senate and legislature, are part-time jobs. So you do have other jobs, and you could make the argument, well, a man can't live on this, so they come up with all of these ruses. But essentially, it is self-serving. The number one item on any politician's job is his own career. When a matter comes up, I do not think many of them say, although they might at one time have said, what's good for the people here? What's good for the people? No, it's what does this do for my career? The politician's imagination only extends to the next election.
Right.
And this is the thing. And his argument is, well, I can't do all these wonderful things for people if I'm not elected.
Yeah.
And so it just goes round and round. But it's going to be interesting to see, because if Jeff Van Drew, a elected the Democratic congressman,
From Jersey,
from a district that is normally conservative, then he certainly has some loyalties there. And what his motive is, I do not know.
Well, it could very well be like he's up for election next year, too.
Yeah.
And he could be on his way out.
But perhaps let's give him credit. Maybe he is a person of principle. Yeah. And he's saying this process is absurd. It is destructive. It is absurd. And it's only a smokescreen to keep this, to keep churning this business so it goes on and on and on. And there will be no real debate on issues in which the Democrats could very well not be able to compete when you consider some of the pluses of this administration. So that we'll see. I had a brush this morning with a healthcare system. And I have harangued about what's happened with it. And it is just so symptomatic of what's going on. I know this is a personal thing, but I think it's universal. I know you've had some problems with it, too. Yesterday afternoon, I started getting an itch on my side. Scratch, scratch, scratch. I finally took a look, and it was a big kind of a red patch. And I looked carefully, and I said, oh, boy, I got a flea bite because we have animals or something of the sort. Well, there was no source of anything like that. And so, okay, so I put something on it, some gold bond itch powder or what have you. And all of a sudden, they started breaking out in other places. Mm. And it itched like the dickens. So I would get them, and suddenly, it was on the other side. It was on my back, going down the arms. Violently red.
Sounds like an allergic reaction to something,
that,
right?
That's what it sounds like. Food? To something, but I couldn't think of anything. But so the point is, I had a heck of a time trying to sleep last night because I was itching all over. And I probably put so much Gold Bond itch powder on, I sort of slid out of bed, you know, how you serve, like a lubricant, I suppose. But anyway, and it seemed to ease up. It eased up except on my right arm. Mm. And that was ferocious itch all night. So this morning I got up early, and all of a sudden, like everything was coming back again.
Oh, wow.
Now, it should be fairly simple for somebody who knows something about this to say, here's what it is.
Maybe a detergent?
Again, we're speculating, and I speculated, and can't find anything. But the point is, I decided I was going to call my doctor, whom I've had for 25 years, who was close to the station here, and I knew I was coming up today, and to see you. Why don't I drop over after we get through here, take a look, and tell me what's wrong. So I call, and of course, he is now in a system.
Mm.
And so you don't just call the doctor's office and the nice people who worked for him for years know you. You have to go through completely impersonal voicemail situations.
So he's not his own boss. He's an employee of somebody else.
You
now.
See, I'm told, I didn't know that. I'm told that's the way it is. I'm told when the doctors enter these systems that they actually sell the business to them.
Yes, they do.
And this is why an orthopedic surgeon told me one time, I've talked about this before, I have what's called Viking disease, which is something where a tendency for your fingers to kind of, like trigger finger, I think they call it sometimes. And the orthopedic specialist in hands who worked on that, whom I got to know, went back one time. I took somebody else. It wasn't for me. I took a friend, so he made an appointment. He came in, and he was shaking his head. And now this is a respected specialist in a system. And he said, my job is not caring for patients' health anymore. It's creating volume. And this is what happens. So I call. I finally get through. I ask if I could speak to this very nice lady who's been sort of running the office for a number of years. Well, no, she cannot come to the phone just now. What did you, what's your business? What did you want? This is a person, I don't know. I don't think this person was at the office. I think this was some center somewhere.
Yeah, because you don't know where you're encountering.
I don't know.
Call
and I told him the situation. I said, I'm going to be in the area. I'd like to come by for a couple of minutes, have the doctor or somebody in the office. Have you probably even, the cleaning lady could look at me and see something is not right here and tell me what it is. And it won't be but a second. Oh, but you'll have to make an appointment because we have to schedule this as a session or something. I said, well, I don't need a session. I had one 2 weeks ago with the doctor, the physical and everything. I just want somebody to take a look, tell me what it is, and tell me what I can put on it, what I do. Tell me. Give me an idea. Well, we can't do that. I said, oh, well, I'll tell you what. I could work you in at 2:30 this afternoon, maybe, for an appointment with Dr. something else. I said, well, I never heard that name before. Do I have the right place? He was just sent here by the system. and I go through and then she said, and I said, oh, hell, I guess I'll do something, hang out and go over. Oh, I can't do that because somebody else got that. How about next Tuesday? What? I don't know. I may be totally engulfed by this.
Yeah.
It may be the blob.
You may end up having to go to an emergency room.
That's what I said. She said, I guess I'd probably better go to an emergency ward. She says, well, yes, okay, that's the thing to do. Like, that's the end of it. And I said, is this the way business is done now? This man has been my doctor 20 years. I don't get to see him when I'm sick? Well, that's not how it works now. So I didn't take a deep breath and tell them where to stick their system, which I wanted to do. But this is what's going on. And this is terrible. Now, for the doctor's point of view, if I may continue here from the doctor's point of view, I can understand why he may engage himself in one of these systems. Oh, first of all, the reason that they have to set it up as an appointment, I'm sure, is they make more money that way.
Of course they do. They're not going to dispense
free info.
They put it
down as a total exam and
on
everything.
On the phone, they're not going to just let you come in and look at you in the lobby and say, put some salve on it something.
Yeah, here, go to the pharmacy and get some
They're
of
not going to do that. They lose a $250, $300
They want the fee. But anyway, this now the doctors, I used to go to a doctor. The doctor was there. He was your doctor, and he had maybe one person working with him.
Yeah.
He would be trained or maybe not, but a nurse or a person. And that was it. Now the doctor has to have a small army of support people.
Right,
because
of
the messed up system and all the billing and the complexity of it. Now, so he has to have certainly a higher income. The other thing is that he gives me the old deja vu in New Jersey thing, is that he's probably paying a fortune in malpractice insurance because that is so lucrative to the legal community.
So joining a system probably offsets some of his costs, a team.
Well, he may have a guarantee from the system. At least he's going to eat.
But there again, on the other side of that coin is that the system puts unrealistic demands on the physicians.
Yes.
And it really cuts them. I've heard a couple of physicians having to take pay cuts through these through the systems. Once they're in, if they're not generating enough income, they're going to say, we're going to cut your salary X percent because you're not bringing in
the traffic. Oh, I'm sure there's their quotas. Yeah,
that
that's the volume
that we thought you were going to
that he talked about. Yeah. And you notice also to make appointments now, your appointment is not like on the hour or the half hour. It's like
for 110,
6:10 or 20, 30. So they're figuring about 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I think, with my cardiologist
Like I said, and I told you this story.
Oh, tell that.
Like a year and a half ago, I went to a specialist, and it was one of my first visits, and we're talking about a couple of subjects, and I asked too many questions. I went past my allotted time, and I got double billed. I got billed for two appointment cycles.
You piggybacked.
Because I asked too many questions.
But anyway, going back, I mentioned the high cost of the malpractice insurance. Go back to the 90s. There was a move afoot in the medical community to encourage by the legislative community to pass legislation that would cap the property tax damage awards.
Yeah.
And the medical community was all for that, of course, and the insurance community. But against that, of course, was the Trial Lawyers Association and other people who profited from the situation. Now, in the process of it, there was a legislative election coming up, and we got involved in that. I was working with some doctors on that. And we talked a lot about it on the air. We had interviews on the air with them. And the doctors had found out that the way to get something in New Jersey is to lay money on the legislators, campaign contributions. So getting good advice, not from me, but getting good advice from people close to the, in fact, some people in the legislative community, they raised a war fund.
Right.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it came up to a whole lot of hundreds of thousands of dollars. They laid that on legislative campaigns because, well, this is, you know, if you want legislation, this is what you do. And so they did that. The doctors raised their war chest in addition to spending some money on some advertising, pleading their case. And they went to the polls expecting that after the election, the people that they had helped get elected would look favorably upon their cause.
Yeah.
Well, the people who looked favorably upon their cause did not, turn their backs on them completely. Now, the reason why, the medical community had raised a war chest, they gave one time, one election. Trial Lawyers Association had a war chest, as big, if not bigger. They gave it, but the elected officials say, the lawyers will do that every election. Met doctors only going to do it once.
Yeah.
So guess who we're going to side with.
Go with yeah.
But everything is just so messed up. I want to get one more thing here. Dan Alexander is going to help us with this because we talked about this once before. Dan, the tuna, what is it, tuna shaming?
Lunch shaming.
Yeah. And the lunch shaming quickly was that some school districts, one Cherry Hill notably and some others, had decided that any student whose parents had not kicked in the money for the lunch after running up a debt of so much, which wasn't really very much, the child would not get the regular lunch. He would get a tuna sandwich.
Correct.
Now, when I first heard that, Dan, my feeling was, hey, man, this is great for nutrition.
I love those school tuna sandwiches.
And to pay for it? Good heavens.
Why not?
But apparently kids, as they do nowadays, would shame, as it's known, kids for eating a tuna sandwich. If you were eating a tuna sandwich, that meant what, Dan?
Well, it got to the point where the kids would know what someone eating a tuna fish 100% meant.
Yeah.
So that's where the shaming part of
it. It meant your parents were in arrears.
Right.
Yeah.
Apparently at the lunches now, it's like going to a restaurant to have lunch at school. And they all have a big selection of whatever they want. But you are with your tuna sandwich. Therefore, there must be something wrong. So because one of the parents has said that the kid in Cherry Hill has said the kids all know what tuna sandwich means.
Like, no. Oh, no, stay away from the buffet, wow. You. Here's your tuna sandwich.
Now the next thing, the current thing is that I believe in Pennsylvania some good people offered to pay the school for that, and the school boards turned it down. They would not let somebody else pay for the arrears of those parents, which is what, $25 or something? I mean, it was ridiculously.
It was like $20 or $25 to pay
the
district.
I mean, that's a week's worth. If you're behind a week, they're going to cut your kid off. Anyway, that's another matter. But in New Jersey, I think one district you were telling me has refused having outside help, but
again, back to Cherry Hill.
But somebody else did.
What happened there is that a former owner of a bunch of ShopRite supermarkets offered to take care of the bill for the Cherry Hill's lunches that were in
place. Uh-huh.
And the school board said, no, thank you. It's not going to solve the root problem of what's going on, because it was really they saw it as more of a temporary fix than a permanent solution to the problem.
Oh, I thought somebody had.
Well, that's what you're thinking of is Aaron Vogt wrote a story on our website. The Liquid Church came forward. They have a couple of churches around North.
The Liquid Church?
Name of a new
non-denominational worship
group.
Non-denominational Christian church launched in 2007 that is, quote, Bible-based and Christ-centered.
Yeah.
And they have locations in Essex, Middlesex, Monmouth, Morris.
They'll rent schools or different buildings for their worship services.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway. So
it's an itinerant moving target for the anti-church people, I guess.
I guess it's set in some areas, but they rent buildings. They don't have like a traditional church or.
So our Aaron spoke to the Essex County pastor, Jim Gottschall, and they did a special collection of the church. And what they wound up doing was donating thousands of dollars to several districts, about 1,500 families in Roselle, Sayreville, Somerville, Nutley, and Parsippany. They donated. They took care of their lunch bills.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
And the school.
They don't want to make a big deal about it.
The schools did accept it.
Yes.
That's great.
That's good.
That's great.
Yeah.
The church. The pastor said they didn't want a lot of attention. They didn't do it for the attention. Mm-hmm. They did it just because they thought it was the right thing to do. So
great.
Their donation in Nutley was the first to be reported, and then after Aaron talked to them, found out that they had actually done several.
You know, somebody could start a GoFundMe, and in about 3 hours, they'd have enough money to pay off all of this.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I want to do on that subject is to tell children to give this some thought, or the parents of children who have been eating tuna sandwiches. Now, you've been pretty, if you wanted lunch, if you're in that category, you're pretty much forced to eat a tuna sandwich, right? If you're hungry.
That's if you want a school, if you don't.
If you wanted the school lunch.
That's what you get.
And let's say some of these people had been arrears because perhaps they were having some financial difficulties trying to keep their head up through the taxes and the like expenses. And so if the child wanted to eat, ate a tuna sandwich. Now, for any kid who did that during this thing and is still doing it, I guess, you may have a good thing come out of that. Although it may have been embarrassing at the time, and it's tough being bullied or
shamed,
I guess, the same thing. But the tuna. Now, I know a person who practically lived on tuna sandwiches. This is true, not forked tongue. I'm not an elected official, so I don't have to do it that way. I once knew a person, good person, nice person, who lived almost on tuna sandwiches.
Yeah.
And she would have tuna sandwiches on a bagel for breakfast, and tuna sandwich at lunch, and then for dinner, more often than not, a big tuna sandwich.
Wow.
She just loved it. And this went on for a long time. Well, she developed, neurasthenia, is that the term they call it when you're getting numbness in your extremities, and especially in the legs and the feet, a certain numbness. And then she went to a doctor, and they couldn't figure anything out in the normal test. And finally, somebody came up with the idea of testing her for heavy metal poisoning.
Oh, like mercury.
Which seemed ridiculous. I mean, she wasn't doing anything that has that in it, you know of. No, it's not you're poisoned by the music,
yeah,
which is very possible. But I think that can be fatal. I mean, we're talking about something on a lower level than that.
But like mercury and too much
mercury, especially in tuna. Yeah. Now, she was tested and tested positive for that. The only possible source was tuna. Now, this was not cheap tuna farmed somewhere in Thailand or what have you. This was the good stuff that presumably the albacore or the white, you know, whatever it was, of a very popular brand.
Solid white.
That
tuna.
You had nothing, the solid white, nothing to be suspicious about. But she did that. Now, if you have been a person who had was forced to consume tuna sandwiches, it seems to me you could make a legal case that the school has forced you to ingest a toxic subject, a substance.
Hmm.
Therefore, you can sue the pants off them. So think about that now. You talk about taking advantage of something, that of a negative, silver lining to the dark cloud. Think about that now. You come up with something.
There's positives in everything.
Yeah. And I'm sure that there are lawyers out there who would jump all over this. I shouldn't have said this. Any lawyer heard this, you're going to see this on television now.
Have you eaten too much tuna at school?
Have you been forced to eat tuna?
Call this number
at
the bottom
school.
Of your screen. 1-800-TUNA-NOW.
Anyone from Law and Order is watching this. We'll see this on a show in 6 months.
Boy, we've done something here. I don't think we're going to accomplish any more than that.
I'm going to go home.
Television shows. We're saving children from lives of deprivation.
You got me in the mood for a tuna sandwich. I got some home in the refrigerator. I'm going to crack open a can, get a little mayo.
Better than a big tuna hoagie.
Oh, man. And I got some bread at home, too. You got me. I think I know what I'm having for lunch. Thank you.
So I'm going to go sit in my car and itch for a while and scratch and see if I can.
Well, hope you're better, man.
Let's see. It's scary, though.
And then next week, we'll be back here next Thursday talking about is it the death of the two-party system in New Jersey? Has another nail been put in the coffin of the Republican Party after this election?
In a sense, you could almost argue for that the party's dead in New Jersey. And it is on its last legs nationally. Donald Trump is not a Republican. He is technically, but he's certainly...
In New Jersey, it's certainly teetering on the brink of extinction.
I mean, if there ever was an independent, guess who it is.
Right. So we'll see.
One more thing. There's always one more thing. Speaking of Donald Trump, didn't mean to get into the national picture. They had the raid that killed al-Baghdadi.
Yeah.
We were hearing a lot about the commando-type raid. Now, here's what happened immediately after the president announced that they had had this raid, this successful clandestine operation. Well, he told the Russians before he told the Congress. That's a sign of collusion with Russia. Can you imagine you're running a secret operation? You're going to tell anybody in Congress?
Not in this
atmosphere. That is not going to stay secret nearly as long as it takes them to get on the phone to CNN. And as far as telling the Russians are partners in the airspace. They have their rules worked out. And now everybody tells everybody what they're doing. If you didn't, then all the Russians and the Turks and all are going to see with their Air Force patrolling that area, the no-fly area. They're going to see somebody flying in the no-fly area.
Yeah.
These helicopters coming in, and they're going to shoot them down.
Yeah.
So you're going to tell these people that you're going to do this. But to tell the Congress...
He did the right thing.
I wouldn't even tell Congress after the raid.
Did you enjoy the video I sent you?
Yes. Tell about that.
After the president announced the death of al-Baghdadi, I sent Jim a clip from the old Second City TV program with John Candy and Joe Flaherty on the Farm Report with Billy Saul Yurok and Big Jim McBomb.
It was Celebrity Blow Up.
Celebrity Blow Up, and they were just talking about it, and the clip said... He blowed up. Yep, he blowed up.
Blowed up real good.
Blowed up real good. He got heat. Yeah.
What was the other one you said?
Blowed himself up.
It was a quiz show.
We can't say the words. It was a little meme with the president playing playing Wheel of Fortune, and he's filling in the
with
blanks.
A bad word. Okay.
Yeah, but it was pretty funny if you
I
see
think
it
it's
online.
Time to leave.
Yes, it is. But he blowed up real good.
I noticed Lou Hockman, the producer,
right,
here,
he's shaking his
he's
head,
holding
going,
the door.
We should have quit 5 minutes ago.
Hey, listen, thank you very, very much. Enjoyed sitting here chatting with you and hearing, you know, back from your remarks about it. I think the only thing we can say that we got 100% positive response to, and that everybody agreed, is that politicians are not the most trustworthy people we have. Yeah. Think of that. Thanks.
Gerhardt's back.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
From NJ1015.com, this is the new Jim Gerhardt Podcast.